welcome to the Global Policy Review podcast. Every month, we'll be joined by special guests as we explore the world of tech policy and its impact on industry and society. I'm your host, Dana Poponete. In this pilot episode of Access Partnership's flagship podcast, we hear from CEO Greg Francis, Principal for Fair Tech Policy Peter Lovelock, and Head of Policy Implementation Samantha Torrance on the rollout of new technologies and the interplay with policymaking.
Hello, good to see you both, and thanks for condescending to talk to the one of the three of us who doesn't have a doctorate. You guys are way cool. And to everyone else, welcome to the big conversation at Access Partnership. I'd like to start off pretty briskly with a thesis that I'll borrow from the late, great Sidney Lumet's film Network. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And what I'm mad as hell about, our inability to take advantage of technologies faster because we don't trust them. It's that trust gap. We don't trust them because we can't figure out how to make sure that when they are rolled out, the guardrails and the rules of the road are set. We haven't seemed to figure out how to do policy better since the first horse and buggy knocked over the first person, the establishment of the first road sign. We're faced with a concomitant rollout of AI. There's been a lot of talk about that. This is February 2023. Similarly, quantum computing. Robots in the metaverse, all in the public discourse today, and we're no closer to coordinating the release of these technologies with a policy that ensures that they're used for good and are accessible to everyone. It's a pretty epic fail. So the question to you, my overschooled colleagues, is what is going to create greater duty of care among companies and governments and civil society?
It's a good thesis, and I like the way we came at it, particularly the quote from the iconoclastic network. But what you're saying, to summarize it, is we've seen the movie plenty of times. How do we change the ending or adapt the ending for a more redemptive outcome right now? And I think we've got all of the pieces in place. The problem that we've got is the sequencing with which we do it right now. If we're going to address all of the problems, we've got the challenges that we have in front of us. We know that technologies are required, if not the key element in solving so many of the issues we've got in front of us right now, that the technologies need to come into play and into use faster and in a more equitable and level uprising, level inducing and level uprising benefit to all, which means we need to make them fit for purpose as we bring them into market. So the speed is a given. We want the innovation. We want the speed of market access. We want the introduction of the technologies into the markets. And I would take a step back from where you're framing the question of all of these new technologies such as AI. I think we need to be leveraging up from the existing technologies we've got. Mobile payments, for example. The universal access to communications networking, the much faster rollout and adoption of cloud computing technologies for the benefits and the innovations to fuel through. We need to see these landing faster and in a fit for purpose way in our markets. And I think that's where we really need to accelerate the conversation now. We're talking about market access in a fair and equitable manner. Which I would then turn the question over to Samantha, who comes at this from the flip side of the equation, if you will, the emerging markets, the how do governments make sure that they're pulling these opportunities into the global south at a speed with which we can see that leveling up and that increase in scale and scope of innovation?
I think Peter raises a very interesting point around the relevance, of these technologies to broader markets, particularly when we're looking at the global south, developing countries, emerging markets. And I think, the success of products and services like mobile money that Peter mentioned was that they were targeted at solving particular problems. So, financial inclusion, access to finance within developing countries was the problem, and mobile money was the solution that was developed from that. We've got to do the capacity building as to what these technologies are. I think until we address some of the fundamental challenges that are being faced within some of the developing countries and emerging markets that we're looking at, the success of getting some of these new technologies into those markets is going to be potentially slower than we would like in the least. And at the most, you know, potentially offer barriers to do that.
Let's just try and agree on a general cadence of what happens, right? First, tech comes out into the world and is available to as much of the world as it's available to. And the world is filled with fear and with skepticism. And the tech is closed out of a whole bunch of markets. And then, as Samantha suggests, corporates embark on this campaign of intense education around the benefits. And meanwhile, the disparities are growing between populations that already have access to the technology and those that don't. And there's generally a period of simmering mistrust and governments kind of wait around for someone else to make the first move. And then some consensus around a policy framework emerges, and that's followed by a gradual but, you know, nonetheless uneven rollout that creates further inequities. So it's kind of like a scary movie. You know, the plot just gets funnier and more improbable each time they make one. Is that your understanding of the rough way this has worked so far? Because if it is, then we can solve for the question of how we bring closer together the rollout and the good policy that enables the tech. But we have to agree on that framing more or less, do we?
I definitely agree with that process. And I think if we look to the question at hand at the moment, you know, there's certainly lessons that can be learned from that to speed up that process. And that, you know, involves both national options, you know, options at a regional level, and certainly at a multilateral level. And, you know, particularly given the climate that we're in now and having come out of 2 years of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, certainly there's an example from, you know, another sector in that where we demonstrate, you know, what can happen in a very short time when policymakers, regulators, and the private sector really join forces to address, you know, a core fundamental issue that's in front of us.
The cadence and the framework that you're putting forward, Greg, are fine, as long as we assume that the world continues, when we're looking at it from the technology lens, on a supply side basis. We bring in the supply of technologies, governments and populations react, some rules of the road get written, the supply is now allowed to roll out and demand will find its way to supply. One of the great revolutions we've seen over recent generations has been the demand-driven ability and applicability of technologies. And to your mad as hell question, I hear a question that says, surely we're looking to scale this up in as safe a manner as possible, as fast as we possibly can now. And if we're arrogant enough to keep thinking that that same old path is going to get us there, that sounds like Einstein's definition of insanity to me. It's going to keep being more problematic. We've all identified that we feel that the regulators are not fit for purpose anymore, which sounds arrogant and dismissive. They know their game. We're trying to change the game. And the game that we're talking about is technology lowers the costs and the barriers to entry. It allows everyone to come into the market as fast as possible. The mobile money, or what I would call digital transactions, are one of the great examples of recent times. We can put a wallet in everyone's hands with the money and the technology we have now. Surely that creates massive innovation opportunities. And surely that's what we're talking about in addressing the problems. And that only scales up with quantum computing and AI and all the derivatives that are going to come from it. What we're trying to do now is work out, A, what the innovation possibilities and opportunities are, and B, how to safely risk manage our environments so that real world examples come in and that we can manage for those and learn how to put those out in a scalable fashion. If we try to control this too much, we're going to miss out on those real world examples of bringing technology into market. So I'm a little wary of a hypothesis that says we follow the same cadence and we worry too much about the applicability of technologies into different markets. I think we speed up.
Yes, but you still have Zeno's paradox that applies, right? If you're going to get to the goal of a simultaneous release of technology and release of, or acceptance and use of, a policy framework that makes it fair, accessible, universal, and good, or net positive at least, then you have to get halfway there with each step. So I have to maybe draw a line under the theoretical part of this conversation and now ask, you know, at a practical level, what steps are we recommending as individuals or as a company that our stakeholders take?
So I was trying to take the first half step in that answer. I think we learn carefully to manage for risk rather than supply delivery. I think we look at the tools we've got, and we've got examples of us in front of us. Things like what came out of the financial technology sector application, the sandboxes, working out that you are not trying to license providers of technology, mobile money technologies in, because getting the technology, the digital transactions capability into the hands of the masses was going to provide a lot of new solutions. You wanted people to be doing all manner of things, not simply accessing a bank account and then migrating up to savings and insurance and loans. You wanted them to be doing their purchasing of their groceries, of their taxi rides, of everything, because it was an integrated application. You wanted them able to take loans instantaneously with credit that they could get managed on an individual basis. So you introduced the risk managed framework by which the technology could come in. We could make sure it was systemically safe, but we were now pushing the rules out as the technology comes into market. I think we're looking at the same thing for content moderation. We know that different morales, different cultures are going to apply these technologies with different nuance. And so we need to be learning that as we go. If we try it prescriptively, we're going to have problems. The same is going to be true right now. And we're seeing it in live real time of things like ChatGPT and the generative machine learning tools that are coming into the market. You see teachers now coming to the fore and working out they've got to use the technology to work out how they will address for plagiarism and cheating of the use of the tool to subvert what they're trying to do. And we see those tools now. That's what we need to start accelerating on.
So what was it about mobile money, Samantha, that was so sticky, that communicated so easily? I mean, we can all guess, you know, there's nothing more empowering than having, I don't want to use any particular currency, but you know, as they say in New York, to have a shekel in your pocket and be able to spend it on anything you wanted, that's consumer choice, that's empowering, that's what creates innovation and entrepreneurialism. So we can understand why, but what was it from a governmental perspective that made it such an easy thing to lean into, and not just in a few places, you know, pretty universally in the Southern Hemisphere?
The fundamental success of mobile money was that it addressed a major government policy concern. So, you know, financial inclusion, within countries was a huge barrier to addressing poverty and, you know, effectively stimulating economic growth within countries. So I think mobile money was very lucky in the sense that the solution or to the problem that it was solving was directly related to a government policy issue or at least a public policy issue that was, you know, of core concern. So the merging of those two objectives, led to an open environment for mobile money to initially take root, to spread. And then when it reached, a critical mass, you know, that's when, you know, various regulators, etc., got involved. But at that point, there had been enough sort of demonstration effect. The kind of pilot had worked to show the benefits. And yes, there were some, were some risks and there were some weaknesses to that. But it was addressed after the fact and after the proof, had been demonstrated. And I think that's very similar to sort of where we can take, you know, new technologies in a similar fashion. The ability for government to enhance its policy making or decision making through the use of, AI, using big data, etc. I think offers, great potential across the world. Maybe just going back to Peter's point around sandboxes, I really like that idea. And I think, you know, for a lot of the economies that we're talking about, there is a suspicion, and there's not just a suspicion over the technology at play and, you know, potentially a misunderstanding or a lack of understanding, but it's also where that technology is coming. And I don't think that, or coming from, I should say, and I don't think that we can avoid the question around, you know, the geopolitical environment that we face at this point in time. So the sandbox offers that safe harbor, I guess, to experiment, to see, you know, where things can go in a very controlled environment, which does speak to how a number of governments within the Global South, you know, are operating at this point. But what I would say is that I think that this should be done, you know, at least as collaboratively as possible from a cross-country perspective. Let's not have individual sandboxes in every country, perhaps, but let's look at regional sandboxes. Let's use those economies of scale, bring together knowledge resources, financial resources to actually, you know, create the parameters for the best experiment possible.
All right, so we've got solve, make sure that the technology is positioned to solve a particular problem. That's for sure. I mean, this is something we've known for 20 years internally. Sandboxes, for sure, there's a flexibility there. And I think, Samantha, you're right to pick up on the idea that a multiplicity of sandboxes, because that builds diversity into the test cases, which is absolutely necessary. Not diversity in the slightly highfalutin sense that we know it in the G7, but diversity truly geographically and across all forms of divides globally. And yes, collaboration. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the conversation, but what about collaboration, or where or by whom? What convening authority can we lean on to help here?
Can I just very quickly, before we go into that, because it's an important next steps question, just make sure we don't limit ourselves. Let's not be arrogant enough to think that we know that we're going to ask the right questions in how we set up these mechanisms, be they sandboxes or more broadly. How do we solve for drones, for example? And one of the great challenges, I remember the mayor of Beijing talking about 20 years ago that would keep him in his job, was he knew he needed to solve for congestion. We're going to have that problem multiple times over. When you put the drone sandbox into the market, who are you protecting?
You're getting to a risk management problem then, aren't you?
As we open this up to introduce technologies, we've got to be smart enough to recognize we have to hear a multiplicity of voices. And I need this to lead into your question, Greg, because we need to bring a table of quite diverse voices in that room to do what you're going to do of who the bodies are that can take this forward. We need the different wise and good coming. They're going to have to be from the public sector and the private sector and academia to be able to frame this properly. But they're also going to have to bring in diverse sectors and diverse communities to make sure that we know how to bring drones into a marketplace that will be as much about e-commerce as it is about aviation, as it is about privacy. We've seen this in COVID-19 with the application of rolling things out quickly. But I think we need to keep that in mind as we roll out the forums into which this can get taken.
Okay, that does lead us though to the conclusion that it needs to be a life or death risk that we're facing before anybody can move faster than the speed of geology. Right? Drones are a great example. There are no drones being rolled out until we can address the question of, well, unless we know that drones or self-driving vehicles are going to be safer than humans doing it. When statistically that can be proven to be the case, we will all be in self-driving cars because it will be the safer option of the two in front of us. Samantha, you were not, I think, saying anything different in your discussion about or your raising COVID-19. You know, the balance of risk, we didn't actually know what the vaccines were going to do in their entirety, but net-net, we figured better to be done with this terrible circumstance and deal with the knock-on effects of vaccine, if there were to be any. For the record, I'm not aware of any. I'm not suggesting that there are going to be. But you know, we swallowed that pill because, figuratively speaking, because it was the better option. We don't have that with ChatGPT or quantum or the metaverse. Right? These are sort of slow burn circumstances. Just to make sure that we are practical in everything that we do. It seems as though at Access Partnership, we're going to have to concentrate on speeding up the application of policy so that the tech that's being released this year and every year from now, because it's an innovative sector, happens as simultaneously as possible. Now, practically, what will that mean?
It means two things at the forefront when working with the private sector and the governments to make sure the solutions are coming into market at speed. One is to be making sure we're listening to our clients and finding for them alternative paths into the market. We have a calcified set of tools right now, but there are opportunities to bring these two together, to bring the playbook in as the technology is coming into the market so that we learn as we go. And there are ways of making sure that we're providing that translation mechanism across government, public sector, and private sector so they learn how to talk together. That can be setting up sandboxes. It could be introducing new mechanisms for standards and standardization so that we're not going through terribly slow processes, but we're speeding this up. We know that in areas such as Web3, in the metaverse, where we've got to solve for governance issues, that the way to get this right now is to be bringing the market players in a standardized, compliant fashion of safety and robustness and security. We're going to learn by doing, so we need to bring that in faster. That means bringing the playbook in and bringing the wise and the good to oversee that in a far more systematic version. We've got a lot of different examples of that out there right now, but we can learn from history how to get smarter. And I think we've attached a few of those right now with the examples.
And I think we can't be too afraid to be wrong. As long as we correct quickly, course correct quickly, then the world will forgive us, Samantha.
Thanks. I mean, when I think about, government bureaucracy, both, at a national level and at a regional level, I think the most powerful way to stimulate action, within those mechanisms is really if the industry comes with one voice. And, going back to the point that Peter raised, that industry is not just the private sector tech players. It also includes the civil society, partners within that. It involves citizens, etc. And I think if the tech sector is really willing to work collaboratively in that way and to put, potential competitive diversions aside, then actually real progress can be made. And certainly that's something at Access that we can help to do.
I think we'll have to, and that will make for a very challenging 2023. Thank you both. We'll bring the moral philosopher in next time.
Thank you, Greg.
Talk soon.